This is Delaware Valley Radio, WDVR, 89.7 Delaware Township, WPNJ, 90.5 Easton, W245CC, 96.9 Trenton.
And welcome to These Days. I'm your host, Gordon Thomas Ward. We have a very interesting show today, and I'm going to start it off with, I don't usually do this, I don't like to play my own songs on my show, but you'll see why I'm doing this today. This is a song that I wrote, was asked to write for the Basking Ridge tree, that 600-year-old tree that was recently taken down. So it's called Trees. I'm going to play it. You can listen to the story behind the song, and then we'll talk to Mike Reynolds, who's making a documentary film about that tree.
They freshen the air that we breathe. down branches, branches form leaves. Leaves do their dances in breezes and seasons. They freshen the air that we breathe.
Okay, that was Trees by yours truly. And the reason why I played that today was because of the guests that we have on the show today. It's my pleasure to welcome documentary filmmaker Mike Reynolds and cinematographer Mariam Bakashvili to the WDVR studio. Listeners may have heard that Basking Ridge's iconic Great Oak, thought to be the oldest white oak tree in North America, could not be saved and was recently cut down. As a result of the decision to remove the tree, the Historical Society of the Somerset Hills, also known as THSSH, joined forces with Mike, a professional filmmaker, to launch a tribute to the 600-year-old tree, which until last Monday stood at the Presbyterian Church of Basking Ridge. Mike is a member of the Historical Society of the Somerset Hills, lives in Basking Ridge within close proximity to the site of the mighty oak, a tree that garnered a flurry of national media attention over the last several months. He is spearheading a project to celebrate what he calls a symbol of longevity in the community, making a documentary film about the tree. So welcome, Mike and Mariam.
Thank you, Gordon. It's a pleasure to be here, and I've got to thank you for that song. What a beautiful way to commemorate the tree.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking me to write it. It was a pleasure, and quite an honor, actually. You think about a tree that's 600 years old. That's incredible. So, Mike, what's your background? How'd you get interested in filmmaking?
Well, I've always loved film, Gordon. I mean, it was a passion as a kid, escaping into the world of films. And then I went on to NYU to study filmmaking. And I just loved every minute of being there and connecting with the other students and just living this kind of intense, immersion into other worlds and creating those other worlds through cinema. And after that, like most of us, I ended up doing a lot of commercial projects, not maybe as artistically fulfilling as I would like. When the news went out that this 600-year-old tree, this organic thing that has lived so long and is so close to me, was passing away, I felt, well, now's the time to do something that I could feel completely passionate about and engaged in, and was very thankful to be given the opportunity, albeit one that's for me very sad to see the tree go.
Right, so passions and history and your background all came together in this perfect world to make the documentary.
That's what I felt. I felt like the stars were aligned.
Yep, that's another way to say it. So I said perfect world. I said no, it's not really a perfect world, but so. Had you thought about doing a documentary about the tree for a while? Like, how long of a process was this?
Well, I have to admit, what drew me to doing it was the news that it was coming down, and specifically, Gordon, people's response to that. I think that's what first pulled me in, was just how strong the emotional attachment to the tree was.
Oh, yeah.
And so that energy, that feeling, which I have to admit I shared as well, I kind of wanted to make the film an investigation of that. Like, what is it that makes us feel so connected in a world that often we're very disconnected from one another?
Right, right. Yeah, people have had very, very strong reactions to this tree. It is, if for people, for the listeners out there who don't live in the Basking Ridge area, you don't have to live there to know about the tree. People were reporting this over in England and in Europe. But just so you know, I mean, there's a retirement village that's named after the oak tree. There's oak streets in town. The oak leaves are on the town's logo. It's right in the center of town. It was right in the center of town. You could see it from any of the shops that you were in the center of town. It was just this huge, huge, what is it, 162,000 pounds worth of tree that came out of there.
Yeah.
Just immense, immense. And I forget the, from branch tip to branch tip.
Oh, God. I believe it was
165
in its heyday.
Yeah, just immense, 160, over half a football field.
That's right. And it's what drew the early settlers to the area.
Yeah.
They saw it there, and they thought this was the best place to build their church. And from there, the Europeans moved in and developed the area.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in a lot of the interviews, one of the things, Gordon, that really started the ball rolling with developing themes was how many people indicated that they felt the tree was a symbol of community. And that was an answer when I asked, well, what do you think about the tree? And that really became a theme of trying to investigate, how do people define community? How do people feel part of a community?
Mm-hmm.
And in Basking Ridge, as you know, there are different groups. Some maybe feel more connected. Some maybe feel not as connected. And I wanted to use the tree as a symbol of investigating that.
Right. There have been so many stories that have come out about this, and it seems like that as soon as you scratch the surface, it just spiderwebs out into other people that have stories about mm-hmm. this tree. And Mariam, how do you go as a cinematographer, how do you go about capturing that, taking these stories and getting them onto film?
Pardon me, I don't want to cut into Mariam, but I want to say one thing as a prelude to Mariam.
Could you get a little closer to the microphone?
To Mariam's point, what she's going to say. It was so important for me to connect with Mariam. Over a year ago, I saw her thesis film, and I felt so connected with the way she shot it because I felt the tree, as a non-speaking organic being, needs to be represented in a way that it comes alive visually.
Yes.
And Mariam, and she'll go on to explain her techniques, etc., but I had to connect with her because I saw in her film this incredible ability to use images to make people feel and understand what they're looking at. All right, I'm sorry I cut into your time.
Oh, that's okay. So can you repeat the question, please?
I was asking how you take people's reactions to this tree and their feelings about the tree, and how do you interpret that into how do you take something that's very emotional for people and then transpose that into something that's visual?
Well,
if you could get a little closer to your mic, that would be great too.
Yeah. Well, it depends. There are lots of techniques that you do, but it usually you want to do it through camera and lenses and kind of see what kind of what people are saying, and then go ahead and kind of find the visual language that will, you know, correspond to that.
Right.
But for this one, we wanted to create something to show that tree is not just a tree itself, but it's also a character on its own, because so many people talked about it in a way that as though they knew him or her. You know, some people have names for it.
Right.
You know, they would say that they visit the tree, they talk to it, some people paint it, you know, some wrote poems about it. So we wanted kind of to have that feeling that this tree actually is alive and it's your neighbor and you can go to it and talk to it. And now it's dying and it's going to be gone. And I think people realize that. I wanted kind of to, mm-hmm. know, go about that and show that.
Yeah, it is amazing how people had... Might sound funny for people who don't know the tree or know the town, but people had almost personal relationships with this tree.
Yeah.
A very deep-rooted emotional ties.
You're absolutely
with
right.
This tree.
Yeah, and as Miriam said, one of the thoughts with shooting the tree was it was the hero of the story. It was the lead character, right?
Yep.
Here's this aging patriarch or matriarch, depending, and it's going away, and it's almost like a gathering of the extended family to the funeral,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
in many ways, I believe that's what we were able to capture. I mean, for example, one day we shot about 4 hours of the tree, mm-hmm. just all different angles, close, far, branches, roots, etc. Mm-hmm. And then on the takedown, we shot with two cameras and a drone 12 hours each day. So to just give you a feel.
Oh, that was your drone?
Well, there was more than one drone up there. There was a drone battle up there.
Okay.
A couple different filmmakers had drones flying around. But point being, right, we spent so much time with just the visual of it, the way it looked.
Yep.
Because it is the hero of the story. It's what pulls the people together. And, you know, visually speaking, I'd love Miriam to have a word or two on how we shot the interviews, because with different people, we did shoot them different with the idea of expressing something about them visually.
Well, there you go. So,
Mike wanted to talk to people, and obviously every person we talked to, they had their own kind of relationship to the tree, and he kind of wanted to express that relationship as well as what these people were doing, because very often they were somehow connected to the tree. You know, there would be a musician that we interviewed, there would be a photographer that we interviewed, so he wanted feeling of these people's connectedness to the tree. So when we would interview people, we would go and we would take a look at their workspace, at their living space, and we would see what felt right and kind of got to the essence of that person, mm-hmm. and their connection to the tree.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't have everybody file into the same room and sit in the same chair and
yeah.
No, you can't,
yeah,
right,
no.
Gordon? I mean,
no,
each one is a unique individual.
Unique personality.
Yes, yeah. And often I think there were different themes. In other words, many of the artists saw the tree in a very aesthetic way. Mm-hmm. Its beauty, right, the way it affected them emotionally to just see it. Spiritual people, religious people often saw a metaphor for rebirth, for new life.
Sure.
That the tree came back over and over again, right? So there was this spiritual connection to it, mm-hmm. the energy of it, the benignness of the tree. The environmentalist, nature-loving people, conservationists, all saw a message here in caring and cohabitating this world with our natural surroundings. So each of these really needed to have a visual statement. Mm-hmm. And the way Miriam went about shooting this often expressed a lot about that person. As you know, there is a diversity in the community. When we interviewed one musician, he had a very like down home kind of unfinished wood
studio.
Kind of studio. And then we went to a lady that had an incredible home on Bernardsville Mountain.
Yep,
and you
yep.
saw the richness and lushness there. And what visually we were trying to do is show how different they were, but how in some way.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have lots of time to prepare and to go and scout the location, so we would arrive and one day we had 4 interviews in a day. So
wow,
we had to go there,
sure.
you know, not just shoot an interview, but also shoot it in a way that actually expresses something. It's not just a person against a wall, but it's an environment. It's the place where this person functions and lives. And so that's what we would do, Mike and I. We would get there and look around and see what's the truth about this place and what can we show and how can we connect, how can we get the point to people? Because a visual medium is such that, you know, people might not think about it, but when you show it to them, they feel it.
Sure.
You know, they read because what is it that they say? 90-95% of communication is visual, you know. We do not realize it, but we do pick up on those, you know, small things.
Cues.
When people see it, they will realize the differences and the similarities too.
Sure. It's almost like addressing a huge Venn diagram, and everybody has their own emotional approach and experiential past, but that part that overlaps everything, that's common to everything in the center, is this tree.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's right. And I think a lot has to do with the longevity, right?
I mean,
anything that has lived that long, I think, fascinates us as beings that if we're lucky, we make, 70, 80, I don't know what the lifespan is right now, right? But somewhere in the 80 ballpark for American men and women.
One of the graves underneath the tree was a man who died in 1760. He was 103 years old.
Wow. All right. And even then, he's only got 1/6 of the tree's life. Right? We're so drawn to that, this sense of something that almost felt permanent in an impermanent world.
It does, well, because of Sikbisika lives so long, and people don't have anything to gauge that against. It's like people have memories of the tree because they came to the square to sing carols at Christmas time, or they were in a parade, or they were married there at the church, or baptized, or they had a funeral there, or some town event. Any town event, charter day. I mean, there is the tree overlooking all of that.
Yes, in doing research to try and get a feel for what I thought were some underlying themes, I started to research different spiritual groups that feel connected to trees, and something that really struck me, I mean, we know the Druids really connected with trees, but I was reading Norse mythology, Gordon, and I was very intrigued to learn that they have a belief in the tree of life. It's a word in their language that I can't pronounce, but we'll leave it a tree of life. And that all beings, gods included, exist within this tree of life that grew from a seed out of the chaos that was there originally. But in an interesting twist, maybe different than a Judeo-Christian kind of thought frame, is that even that tree of life recedes back into the chaos. In Wagner's opera, right, this is called Götterdämmerung, the twilight of the gods, that even the gods go away. But then they go to chaos, and the tree grows again from a seed. So I thought that there was something here that really moved me, that I didn't want to let go of a sense of longevity. I just wanted to see that or feel that all things do cycle back and life can't be stopped.
And that approach, that holistic approach, is one of the things that's going to make this film really, really good.
Thank you.
I know it is.
And with the film, Gordon, one thing I wanted to touch on too, and I know as a musician, you connect with this as well. You have all these tools. You have lyrics and you have music, right? Mm-hmm. But with film, what I feel is so powerful is we have sound, we have visuals, we have montage, cutting, editing, and we have all this available to us to make something magical about this tree.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it has to be that way. I think that we have a tremendous responsibility to honor the tree using every means that we have at our disposal. Mm-hmm. I believe you captured that with your lyrics and your guitar playing. And our goal is to capture that with our cinematography, our editing, our soundtrack, all these tools that are there.
And like you said, there were poets and artists, visual artists, creative things. It's going to be fantastic. Let us take a quick break at the end of the first half hour here. Boy, there's so much I still want to talk about with this tree. Keep it right there.
This is WDVR 89.7 Delaware Township and WPNJ 90.5 Easton.
And we are back, speaking with documentary filmmaker Mike Reynolds, and we're also talking to cinematographer Mariam Bakashvili, and we were talking about the tree and just the emotional responses that people have had to it. And boy, what struck me, Mike, about and Mariam about this is that 600 years old, okay? For half of its life, for 300 years, it didn't see Europeans at all. And that's like an average lifespan for a white oak. So all the time that our country has, as far as the Europeans who have come over here, and people from other nations and continents, modern history, the tree was on almost borrowed time. So that's amazing to me. That all of these things that we find, you know, oh, all these memories is it's only the half-life of this tree.
It's interesting, right, to speculate on its life before the Europeans arrive. But you touch on something that's interesting, Gordon, and we try to weave this into the film in a positive, forward-looking way. One of the things you may have noticed is the tree, as you indicate, right, it was here long before the Europeans. But once the Europeans arrived and started developing the area, it kind of became their history. It became the history of the Europeans, who then became the Americans. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things that we hope the tree has been able to do is to let newer arrivals understand that they could be also woven into this fabric of history. When we talk about American history, yes, in many ways we do talk about European arrival with the, quote, discovery of America, giving somewhat short shrift to the native peoples that lived here long before that. But I think we've done a good job in trying to move towards educating people about that. But I also want to say that we went to the tree transfer. I thought there was something very metaphorical and powerful about this. The young oak that was grown from an acorn of the great oak was in Union County College in Cranford. It grew there in a nursery to 15 or 20 feet tall. And at the dedication, we were able to see young people, and they were very diverse. They were of all different backgrounds.
Sure. Yep.
And
yep.
The president of UCC went out of her way to make a point of saying, as history marches on, we could all be woven into that fabric. So yes, you might not look like George Washington or Lafayette, but you're here now, and you're here as part of something historical, and this is part of the fabric that is our nation. And I thought that was very powerful, and I really hope that she's right, that even if you come to a new place, that you could feel engaged by it and become a part of it. Mm-hmm. One woman that we interviewed, Susa Belli, who's the chairwoman of the Historical Society of the Somerset Hills, in her interview, I'm paraphrasing her, said, "You make and you create the community you're a part of by participating in it." And I think that's really how history is written, right?
Absolutely.
History is written by participating.
That's right.
And even though this was a sad event, I hope through the art celebration and through other means going forward that everyone, new arrivals as well as people that have eight generations buried in the cemetery, could feel connected and woven into a fabric of history together.
Well, that's just it. And what's really cool is that an offspring from this tree is now buried, or is now planted behind the church. So I mean, it's the same DNA, if you will. I mean, it's just directly from an acorn from this tree that's been grown to about 17 or 18 feet or so and is now growing in the same churchyard.
And I think for me, what was very powerful about this, and after I'm done gabbing, I'd like Mariam to put forth how she filmed this stuff. What I thought was very powerful about the tree and the artist, two things, Gordon, is that things happen in this world that we simply cannot control. There is death, there is storms, there is, you know, all kinds of things happen, but we can always make a difference. That tree couldn't be stopped from going away. Mm-hmm. But we did nurture an acorn, we grew it, we transferred it, and we placed it in the church ground. People remembered the tree and honored it through art, that it could live and younger generations could see it. Yes, there are many things in this world that are not under our control, but how we respond to them, how we act after they occur, is all that counts. And Mariam, I would love to know what you were thinking when you were shooting that tree transfer, this kind of powerful moment of not so much resurrection, but the baton of history being passed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not a simple question.
It's not. I mean, it's hard for me to say because I don't feel as connected to that tree as, you know, because I've never heard about that tree before. I talked to Mike and he told me everything about it as we discussed of how to go on about doing the movie. But first time we went there to get a B-roll of the tree, not the young one, the old
the
one.
First,
when he was saying that they were taking down the tree, I didn't really understand why it had to be, you know, gone. Yeah, I agreed with people that it doesn't really have to. But then we arrived at, you know, at the church and started shooting. And, you know, I saw that this tree was held by strings.
Oh, the cables up
the
in the...
cables.
Yeah, right.
And it looked like a, you know, it looked like as though they were just forcing it to live on, you know. So I thought, oh, maybe it's already dead and you're afraid that these branches are going to fall off, you know, at any time. Maybe it's time for it to, you know, to go.
Yeah, that was a challenge.
How many cables in that tree?
There were a lot.
But, you know, that was a real challenge at the beginning of our relationship because I thought, how dare she say that? but it did make me have to think about that point of view. And while we were shooting it, I think my eyes did open to sometimes do we cling too hard? Do we hold on? There were people that were saying, how dare you take it down? And then, you know, the people at the church would say, well, it's going to fall. Like, we can't just let that happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Which is one of the reasons why there were cables in the branches. I mean, yeah. Yes, to support it, but also there is that, you know, insurance issues. Mm-hmm. You know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of people walking underneath the branches. Yeah. You can't have them falling off in ice storms or whatever it might be.
Especially with the historic graves underneath.
Sure.
And you have to make a call on this sort of thing.
35 Revolutionary War soldiers buried underneath the tree or in close proximity to it.
And some people, whether it would be on Facebook postings or in interviews, you know, would say, well, why can't we leave it or why can't we just leave the trunk? And I guess I did start to think about that. My gut reaction was, yeah, let's do that. But then I did think about what Mariam had said, and I thought, well, if I thought about this like an elderly person that really was not living a vibrant life, that wasn't healthy and engaged and active, but that we were just propping them up, right? Is there a point where
life support.
Right, where we do let go. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, in a way, that was part of the big challenge here, is that you had something so beloved.
I know the church struggled with that.
Right? That you didn't want to see go.
Right.
But reality does intervene, right?
It is interesting how when they were taking the cables off the tree, I mean, the branches stayed there. I mean, they weren't going anywhere. So I think it was more of a, you know, you cable them so that in heavy winds or in, you know, ice storms or something that maybe you won't get cracks in the limbs or things like that. But they snapped the cables, you know, to saw off the limbs and the limbs just stayed right there. Mm-hmm. You have to think it, for 300 years, there was no one feeding that tree or cabling the tree or watering the tree. It grew fine for 300 years.
Yeah.
Well, probably grew fine for 400 years or more.
Right.
I mean, and those were the, like, thoughts when as they were taking it down. It's like, maybe the tree is fine, you know? Maybe it doesn't have to be, you know, because then they snapped the cables. Then they, you know, cut off the branches. It's like, oh, my God, no, it's perfectly healthy tree because there wasn't rotting or anything. But then they took the trunk and you could see the rot.
In the center.
And it had a smell.
In the center.
It had such a... I don't know, for me at least, when the smell was very, very strong. I don't know if
you pungent,
felt it.
Yeah,
mushroomy, maybe.
Yeah, very. And so you could see right in the middle, we filmed it.
In the center of the tree.
Very center, yeah, it was.
I was speaking to a couple people on the sidelines there when they were taking the tree down, and a lot of people have a misconception of what's alive in a tree. Mm-hmm. You know, the heartwood, most of the wood there, most of a tree is dead. Because the tree grows out, so it's only the cambrium layer and you know, on the outside, underneath the bark, where the fluids go up and down in the tree to keep the tree alive. Which is why you should never cable. You know, if you're putting up a sign or a driveway barricade, you should never put a wire around a tree and leave it there because it'll strangle the tree. As it grows.
Wow.
So they would cut it, and people would say, well, that wood looks fine. The tree must be alive. It's like, no, it's the outside portion of the tree. That's where the life, it's called xylem and phloem, that these fluids that go up and down
now
the tree.
Now you're showing off.
That's that's where it's alive. But the tree was dead. You know, just because the tree's standing there and not falling apart doesn't mean that it's alive. So I think they acted appropriately because if you leave it there, then the rot will increase, and then pretty soon you are going to have branches falling and more of a problem than you did then. But it was so hard to watch come
around. Yeah, it absolutely was. But Gordon, I feel like we have to touch on something. In the Bernardsville News, did you read that op-ed piece by a fellow?
I did not.
Oh, all right. So there was a fellow who wrote in, and he really criticized the town. And he said, you guys riding around in your Mercedes and BMWs, all you have to worry about is a tree. And the rest of the world is going through all this stuff. And, oh, poor Basking Ridge, you're moaning about this tree. And it really bothered me. You know, I thought, first of all, he painted a very broad picture of a community. And also he dismissed what I think is something so beautiful about mankind is that we can care about something like a tree. Yep. You know,
it's what makes us human.
It doesn't mean that we don't have other issues that we are concerned about. Of course not. Of course, we would rather feed the starving than, you know, worry about a tree per se.
Sure.
But that's not what it is. It's not an either or.
You have to mark it. You have to mark the
one
something that's 600 years old.
One feeds the other,
right.
I believe. I believe if you are the type of person that can care about the nature that surrounds you, then I'm confident you could care about all other things. It's when we stop caring about things is that when I'm really concerned. Mm-hmm. If no one did care that this thing was going down, then I'd say there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So I thought the guy was totally off base. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who shares that opinion, I really think they misunderstand what is one of the higher qualities in human nature.
Well, he might not have had the sense of history that people do. But, you know, I was talking to some people that were watching the tree come down, and they were in their 80s. And speaking to the point that you just mentioned, you know, you mentioned Basking Ridge and people driving around in their Mercedes and things like that. That's a fairly recent development. I mean, I grew up in Bernardsville, New Jersey. And in the 1960s and early 70s, when I was growing up, Basking Ridge was still, in large part, a farming community. You know, the affluence only came in once AT&T was established in town. Before that, it was a very humble town. So you have to honor that history, that part of the history of the town as well. I mean, people...
Also, it's funny, the implication that if you have Mercedes and you're driving in Mercedes, you cannot have problems or cannot care about something.
It's just like... Yeah,
I think
page
he
two.
Was making
page
a real two. False connection there. I don't believe that you could identify any community so simply as that. And one of the things that did come out in the film is that diversity, and that a community isn't about, maybe I'm mispronouncing this, homogeneity, right? Mm-hmm. Or we don't have to be homogenous to be a community. What I thought the people gathered around this tree and the energy of concern about it and interest in it, it showed to me that you could be incredibly diverse and still be a community. You could be from multitude of lands
absolutely.
With native tongues. That's not what a community is. A community is a shared sense of concern and engagement. Mm-hmm. And that could be about many different things. But the rich and the poor, the educated and under, you could all still gather and feel connected as a community. And I hope one of the things that comes out of all the energy surrounding this tree is that we can stand together as very different people with very different backgrounds and all this other stuff, but still be connected because we care.
Yes, that's a great point. Mike, do you think, I have two questions I want to get in here, but the first one is, do you think our sense of history and awareness is changing?
We meaning like
the broader
American society.
Not just yours and mine.
Yeah. I do, and I'm concerned about that. I try to off-camera talk with younger people and get a feel about how the youth are connected with history, and I was not getting that. I felt that we were having a shorter and shorter attention span, and I also feel with the advent of such a highly technological society and all the knowledge that goes into operating this digital equipment, that anything that wasn't in touch with that almost started to feel irrelevant to younger people. They felt a disconnection. At least the vibe I was getting is that if it didn't pertain to the here and now, they really didn't necessarily feel how that affected who they are and how they go about their daily life. And that Washington and Lafayette met under the tree was so interesting manifesting to an older generation and a sense of connection to this incredibly important part in not only American history, but obviously world history, where younger people just, many didn't know who Lafayette was, and the others did not really care about it. So my hope is that we could change that and that we can understand how, who said this, the past is prelude to the future or something like that? I think it is true. I think the past always molds the future, whether it's on an individual level or even more importantly on a broader cultural level.
So tell us about the art exhibition that's planned, and then further out, I know the film won't be done until probably perhaps the fall, early fall. But give us a sense of what we can expect both at the exhibit and with the film.
Well, Saturday night is the opening gala for artists, their friends, the media, and mayors and you know, the movers and shakers. Sunday, it'll be open to the public all day, 10 to 4. The exhibit has over 20 participating artists. All the work is related in some way to the tree. So such as your song, another musician performing a song that he wrote when he was thinking about the tree.
That's
poets
really
reading. Yes. And, and the art, I believe we have an absolutely fantastic cross-section of art. We have paintings that are very traditional. We have some that are far more interested in color and are impressionistic. We have photography that is in beautiful color and others in black and white that explores texture. So I think when people come, they will feel very connected to what is now gone. They will feel connected to what was once the beautiful tree and what it stood for, and it will be reflected back through their fellow community members' artwork. I think it's going to be a fabulous night, and I think that from there, many of the pieces will be asked to travel to local libraries, municipal buildings, hopefully into some galleries. So I feel that the work will not end this weekend with the exhibition at the Brick Academy.
The pieces is 15 West Oak Street in Basking Ridge.
That's correct, yes. The film is going to take a while to edit. I mean, I have to say, we've for an expected hour and a half feature film, we probably have over 40 hours of footage. So there's a lot to go through. There's a lot to whittle down. But it is going to be a visual film. I think it is the visuals that have to speak. So
how long will the film be?
I want it to be an hour and a half. That's what I'd like to target, Gordon, because I would love for this to have a theatrical release as a feature-length film, and 90 minutes is considered a feature-length film.
Great. I can't wait. It's going to be really, really special.
And I hope you'll perform live before the initial screening.
That would be awesome. Okay. I'd love to do that.
All right. Thank you.
Now, how can people keep in touch with this? It's a really cool project. Where can I look come end of summer, you know, beginning of fall to see what's happening with this film?
I am not a very tech-savvy guy, but I have brought on board like a promotions kind of team, and they are setting up a website for the film, and they're helping me kind of do all that social media outreach, et cetera. And I hope to have that website up.
Facebook page or anything?
And we're going to do all that. Okay. Sometime in July, we'll be editing through August. And then starting in the fall, we're going to be sending it out to all the larger festivals, which we really hope to get into, such as Sundance, Hot Docs, Austin, Toronto, and Tribeca, all who have a really good track record in having documentaries getting deals for either a theatrical release and or video on demand.
Wow.
Streaming on demand deals, etc. I mean, you know, you make it, you want it to get out there. You want a lot of people to see it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I wish you the best of luck with this. It's a great, great project.
Thank you, Gordon.
You're welcome. Mariam, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for coming in. And we wish you peace for the upcoming week.
This is Delaware Valley Radio, WDVR, 89.7 Delaware Township, WPNJ, 90.5 Easton, W245CC, 96.9 Trenton.